No, it's very encouraging to see so many, given that Tuesday evening is a meeting evening. We're glad to see you all and make you welcome. Thank you for coming, and the meetings carry through until Friday evening, each night at 8 o'clock, and you'll be welcome as and when you're able to be here. We'll appreciate that. Now, our reading tonight again will be from the book of Genesis, and chapter 31 initially. The main reading from chapter 32, but first of all, chapter 31 of Genesis, and verse 3. And the Lord said unto Jacob, return unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. Verse 13, I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointedst the pillar, and where thou vowedst a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. Now chapter 32, verse 1, and Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him, and when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's host, and he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. Verse 6, the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. Now, later in the chapter, verse 21. Maybe we should read it a little. Verse 13. And he lodged there that same night, and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau his brother. 200 she-goats, 20 he-goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 kine, 10 bulls, 20 she-asses, and 10 foals. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, pass over before me, and put a space betwixt drove and drove. Verse 21. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. And he rose up that night, and took his two wives, and his two women servants, and his 11 sons, and passed over the ford Jabbok. And he took them, and sent them over the brook, and sent over that he had. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel, for as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. And Jacob asked him and said, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name? And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. And as he passed over Peniel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew that shrank. And I think that'll do for the reading and for what I want to say tonight. I think it was somewhere about the year 49 BC. There's a very small little river in the northeastern part of Italy. An insignificant little water course. But there came a man to that particular river, and he hesitated before he crossed it. After some deliberation, he decided to take his army across that river. And when he had crossed it, or as he crossed it, he said, the die is cast. And world history has never been the same again. The name of that river in ancient times, a different name in modern times, but its name in ancient times was the Rubicon. The man that crossed the Rubicon was Julius Caesar. It was said that anyone who crossed the Rubicon was declaring war on the Roman Senate. And it certainly was a day, a move that changed history. An army crossing a small river. The die was cast. And Julius Caesar fought a number of battles, as you know. And he laid the foundation for the Roman Empire. Saw the closing days of the Roman Republic, and his nephew Octavian became Augustus, the first emperor of Rome. So that the crossing of that river was a very significant watershed in the life of Julius Caesar, and indeed in the history of the world. But I want to think about a greater man than Julius Caesar. His name was Jacob. And there was one evening that Jacob came to a narrow river. It's a river that flows from a spring up there towards Amman, the capital of Jordan. And it flows down through the bottom of the hills of Gilead. And it comes into the river Jordan on the eastern side. And when Jacob came to that brook, that little river, it's not a very significant water course, he paused. And something happened that night at that watershed in his life, and the rest of his days were transformed and completely altered. Jacob was more or less a homeboy, at least we gather that from the early reading in his life. He was a boy that seemed to be very much attached to his mother, and he stayed more or less around home until the day that he stole surreptitiously the blessing from his brother Esau, and after that he became a traveller, and I think he was one of the most widely travelled of the patriarchs. When he was in his late 70s, he headed out from home because of the wrath of Esau. He had that experience in Bethel. He travelled about 500 miles plus away up into the land of Padan Aram, stayed there for 20 years. And where we have come into his story, he receives a message from God. He said, "Jacob, it's time to get back to the place where I want you to be. It's time to head for home. It's time to get back to Bethel." He said, "You've stayed in this land of foreigners long enough. You've done business. You've seen success. You've become materially wealthy. But," he said, "I would like to see you getting back. Getting back to Bethel. Getting back to the land that I promised to your father and to your grandfather." So, having received that word from God, Jacob packs his bags and he heads for home. Going back to the land of his forefathers. Going back to Bethel, the place where God had blessed him just before he left the land 20 years previously. As he comes down the eastern side of the Jordan, having travelled for hundreds of miles, he arrives at this little river called the Jabbok. Once he crosses the Jabbok, he'll just come over to the fords of Jordan and he'll be right into the land. But something most unusual happens there. Just the night before he goes over the Jabbok, there appears a man wrestling with him. It turns out that the man who wrestled with Jacob was no less than God himself, because it's a little bit like last night. You remember the angel of the Lord met Hagar by the well, and at the end of the story Hagar says, "I have seen God, thou God seest me." And it's a little bit like that in this story. They wrestle with Jacob, a man. And when you get to the end of the story, there's no doubt about who the man is. Because Jacob says, "I have seen God face to face." And for a little while, it seemed as if God was blocking Jacob's way. It seemed as if God had become an interceptor of Jacob's progress. But you say, that all appears to be just a little trifle strange, because if it was God told him to come back, Why did God not give him a royal welcome? God met him just when he got to the Jabbok. Just before he crossed the final boundary that would bring him into the land. And God crippled him. And nearly crushed him. You say, but what was wrong? If God wanted Jacob to get back to the place where he would bless him and to get back to Bethel and to the place of communion, why did God seem to make it so difficult for him when he came to the last hurdle? Well, there was a little bit of unfinished business in Jacob's life. There was a little bit of unconfessed sin in Jacob's life. And when God met him and wrestled with him at the Jordan, at the Jabbok, God said, listen, Jacob, I want you to get back here. Right into the land, into the place where I want you to be, where you can be for me what I desire you to be. But he said, before you get here, he said, the unconfessed sin will have to come out into the open. He said, you can't get back into the center of my will until your sin is confessed. So it was quite an experience. Maybe even as I mentioned those things in an introductory way, maybe there's someone in the meeting tonight and you're at a boundary in life. And God would be bringing you as he was bringing Jacob on his journey. God is bringing you to the place where he wants you to be. But maybe even in this meeting, God would wrestle with the conscience of some Christian, because there's unconfessed sin and there's some bad business in your life that has to come out into the open. And God challenged Jacob. He said, Jacob, you'll not get an inch further, he said, until you tell me what's your name. He said, just come out with it. He said, you're a good man at dodging issues. He said, you've been very shifty in many an issue for many a day. But he said, now, in the stranglehold of my grip, he said, come out with it. For he said, you will not get an inch further until you have just confessed your true identity. And there's no hypocrisy. There's total honesty. And he said, when that's clear, he said, I'll let you on a cross. You needn't worry about Esau, your brother. He was all taken up with Esau. What Esau was going to do, God said, listen, Jacob, you have someone more important than Esau to think about. You have me to think about. Before Jacob ever saw the face of Esau, he had this wrestling match at the watershed of the Jabbok, where God got into close grips with the ancient patriarch. You know, it's great to think and great to know, dear believers, that God comes into close encounters with his people. God doesn't always stay at a distance. There are times that God comes into our lives in a very real way. And you know, he's going to rearrange things. There's a little play in the Hebrew language that I can't translate into the English language, but I'll do it. This is not exactly how the Hebrew does it, but it'll be enough. It'll be close enough to illustrate the point. I think the very name of this river was significant. If you change the sea in the name of Jacob to a K, you'll see what I'm driving at. Jacob at the Jabbok. J-A-K-O-B at the J-A-B-O-K. Quite often in the book of Genesis, that kind of thing takes place. There's a play on names and play on words that we don't see in English, for example, just to give you another instance of it. And there are others as well. Chapter 24 of Genesis, where Rebekah is being sent out from home and her people wish blessings upon her head. And they say, wherever you go, be a blessing to thousands and millions. The Hebrew word for blessing is the word Baraka. Now that was a play in her name. They were saying, Rebecca, wherever you go, Rebecca, you become a Baraka. And the things were just... Now that's exactly what we have here. God said, I have got Jacob at the jawbuck. And he said, I'm going to rearrange the spelling of this man's life. He said, I'm going to change things around a little bit. He said, I'm going to take some of the consonants and I'm going... You know, quite a number of us in the meeting could do with a little bit of a renovation. We could do with coming to a boundary in life where we would have an encounter with God that would change the spelling and would reconfigure our whole outlook and our whole thinking. That's what happened to this man, Jacob, at the jawbuck. Now, I think for the purpose of what I want to try and say tonight about his encounter with God on this great pilgrimage back home, and this question that he had to answer without any subterfuge or without any deceit, I think I'll mention maybe five matters. I want to think about Jacob. I'll tell you what they are now, and then you'll know how we're getting on, and you'll have the comfort of knowing when it's getting near the end. I want to say something about Jacob intimidated. And that will bring me then to say something about Jacob isolated. Jacob, those are very, very interesting words. Jacob was left alone. He wasn't a man that was too often alone. He was a man that was nearly always in the middle of a crowd with plenty of buzz and plenty of biz. But that particular night, Jacob was left alone. Jacob intimidated. Jacob isolated. Jacob incapacitated. The man wrestled. It seemed to go on for quite a while. And the two that were involved in this deadly grapple, they lurched from side to side. Who's going to go down first? You don't put Jacob down quick. No, Jacob will not go down easily. He has been too shifty a boy, and he's too nimble. He's in his late 90s when this grapple takes place. He'll be getting his birthday card from the Queen within a couple of years. And yet he's no pushover, even though he's 97 or 98. And the man wrestles, and it goes on. And suddenly the man just touches at a point when he says, Jacob, it's enough. The man just touches the hollow of his stomach. He's down. Completely incapacitated. And he would have hit the floor. Only he grabbed onto the man. And in a clinging position, he has lost his legs, and the only thing he can do is hold on for grim death and cry out to the man for grace and mercy. Jacob incapacitated. And then I want to say a little bit about Jacob interrogated. When he's there clinging, hasn't a leg left to stand on, his hip out of joint, he has lost his balance. He has lost his poise and he's just hanging there, absolutely dependent upon this man, hoping that he won't drop me. If this man that has conquered me lets me go, I'll hit the floor. And as he cries for blessing, the man says, tell me, Jacob, before I bless you, what's your name? What's your name? And the last time, as we know, he was asked that question, he told a lie. But there won't be any lie this time. And as he just blurts out, he says, my name is just a heel grabber. That was my name, sir. A heel grabber. He said, I was just a man that took a chance and whatever I could see, I grabbed it. Well, the man said, you'll not be like that anymore. He said, you're not a heel grabber now. He said, you're just hanging on. You're just hanging on. He said, I can see that the touch that I gave you has transformed your whole outlook and your whole attitude. And the Bible tells us that he blessed him there. And lastly, I'll say something about Jacob illuminated. when the old cripple starts to walk over the jabbok, and the Jacob has been rearranged at the jabbok, and when he crosses over to the other side, the Bible tells us ever so beautifully that the sun rose upon Jacob. It was one of the best sunrises he ever had. There was a dawning of a new day. You know, dear Christians, can I say this? That we could meet God at a boundary in life. And God could grapple with us. And God could touch us. I was asking the Lord today that he would touch somebody in the meeting. And that somebody might be me. Just as he touched Jacob, would he touch some of us here tonight in this meeting, so that tomorrow would be like a sunrise in our spiritual experience, and we would be different people? Should we live for 20 years, or live until the Lord comes, we would be wholly different because of this particular boundary. You know, there are boundaries in life, and there are watersheds that are very important. I think that we should be concerned. We should be concerned as believers that so much of our experience is shallow. So much of our experience becomes just a monotonous routine. We say the same prayers. Nothing wrong with praying. We go to the same meetings. Nothing wrong with going to meetings. We get into quite a formality and quite a routine, and there's nothing getting deeper. And there's nothing developing. I tell you, things got deeper with Jacob this day. Just one encounter with God. For a man 98 years of age. You know, we say sometimes if God doesn't touch people when they're young, their lives will be lost. I would say there could be some of the older Christians here could do with a touch. Some of you older Christians here, you could do with a hip replacement. Jacob had a hip operation that he never got over. Some of you older Christians could just do with a wee touch in the hollow of your eye that would make you walk. And some of us who are a good little bit younger, we would need the touch as well. I hope that even this Tuesday night will be a boundary in life's experience. Now, you say, when did God come near to Jacob? What exactly was the situation when God was so kind and came so close and had such an impact on this man's life? Well, it wasn't a great time in Jacob's experience in many ways. The Bible tells us that he was distressed and he was greatly afraid. Now, I don't get the impression that Jacob was a cowardly creature. I think he was a boy that had a fair. He wasn't afraid to take a risk, and he could survive. But he's just coming back now after 20 years, and a score of years, there's an old score with his brother that hasn't been settled. And the memory of the way he cheated his brother and the way he connived 20 or 21 years before it, has given him a bad conscience, and it has made the man a coward. And he's distressed. And you can see in the story some indication of his agitation. You know, it tells us that that night, the little expression "that night," it recurs, it's twice in the passage. That night. And that night, Jacob knew that I am likely to meet Esau the next day or two. And he was ill at ease. And he got up in the night. And he took his wives and the children and all the people, and he took them across the brook. And he took all the livestock across the brook. And then he himself came back. And you can see the man's agitated. And he can't sleep very well. And he's all on the move. He's afraid, and he's greatly distressed. And the carnality of previous years has become a concern to him. Well, I don't know, brethren, I don't know. I'll say this as a message for us all, some of us that are not particularly old. there will be disputes come between brethren. Because of what we are, that will inevitably happen. And you don't have to agree with everything and agree with everybody. But I hope God will help us to deal with each other, that we'll not have a bad conscience about the way we behave 20 years down the road. And Jacob is intimidated, and the overwhelming odds of what is just before him has weighed the man down and has made his spirit very much agitated, I say, and very, very uncomfortable. And yet the Lord comes near to him. I love the way at different times in the Bible, and I can't delay now to mention them, you can fill them in your mind, that God comes close to people in their darkest moments. You know, God doesn't just visit people in the Bible when they were at the top of the twig. You say, I thought the Lord would only come and grapple with you, and he would only come into a close encounter in your life if you were really doing well spiritually and you were in top form. Not at all. Jacob's not doing that well spiritually here, and he's not in good form, and it's dark, and he's fearful. In fact, I was just enjoying it's only an exceedingly simple thought. The last time in the Bible that we get the expression "that night" is in John 21. And it says, that night they caught nothing. They're a total failure. Seven of them in a boat, working away in Galilee. They know the lake well, and they know the techniques of fishing, and they have been successful before. But that night, that particular night, they caught nothing. And the nets are empty. You say the Lord will dismiss them. He'll want nothing to do with them. These men are a total failure. They're fruitless fishermen. And they want, no. You know, it tells us when they got to the shore, damp and bedraggled, that the Lord himself was waiting. And he manifested himself to men that were failures. Dear Christian, maybe there's a Christian here tonight and you're just afraid of what is coming. Maybe not a dispute with your brother. Maybe it's a hospital appointment. Maybe it's something a little bit down the line. Maybe in the soul, in the experience of your soul, it's a night. You know, the old writers used to talk about the dark night of the soul. I'm thankful that just in the midst of his intimidation, when Jacob was full of fear, it was that night that the Lord drew near to Jacob and gave him a special blessing. Oh, I tell you, it is in those darker days that sometimes the Lord can get closer and can reveal himself in a way that he doesn't do when things are going nicely and when the sun may be shining. Jacob intimidated. But then I said I wanted to mention Jacob isolated. And those words that I've already drawn attention to, Jacob was left alone. Everybody's away. Jacob was a farmer, but all the livestock are away. I think there was nothing pleased Jacob more, and the men in the meeting who are farmers will be able to identify with this. Nothing pleased Jacob more to be out in the middle of the flocks and to hear the bleating of the sheep and the lowing of the cattle and to hear the noise of the farm. One man told me when they had that old foot and mouth thing or whatever it was, and his whole herd was killed, he said it nearly drove him mad to go out into the barn, in the parlour, and not even a noise of an animal. You know, Jacob liked to be in the midst of it all, and the noise of the farm. Jacob wasn't only a farmer, but he was a family man. And he took the lady folks, and he took the 11 children. He said, go on over. The livestock are all away, and all the people are away. And now Jacob was left alone. And in the silence of his solitude, he suddenly becomes conscious of the grip of a man's hand. And when Jacob thought, there's not a person near me, and all the people that I have contact with, they are gone. suddenly he becomes aware of a strong presence that touches him. And we'll go on to that in a minute. But can I speak to you for a minute or two about the importance of solitude in a Christian's life? You know, one of the reasons why the Lord can't speak to us more is because we don't give him any space. We're always on the email. And we're always on the phone. And the intrusiveness of modern technology has made silence and solitude almost lost discipline. Can I speak to younger Christians here? And I really want to encourage you to cultivate having space in your life. Put out the friends. Put out the business. Let the family and let the flocks all go. And you have time when you get alone. And it will be in those times of aloneness. Now, I'm not talking about loneliness. You know, there's a great difference to be of aloneness and loneliness. Loneliness can be withering. Some single people feel a loneliness. Some widows feel a loneliness. Some older people even feel a loneliness. There's a loneliness that can be oppressive. But then there's an aloneness that can be very fruitful and healthy. We don't like to be alone. You have your mobile phone hooked on your belt or your pocket. Put it away out of the road. You have your iPod stuck on your ear or something like that. Unhook it. Get alone. What would you say? Oh, I tell you, dear Christians, there's no time in a Christian's life that can be so productive as when he's away from the oxygen of publicity. And he's away from the mirror of image. And when he looks in the mirror, the only person that he can see is himself. Alone with thee. O Master, where the light of earthly glory dies, misunderstood by all, I dare to do what thine own heart would praise. Younger believers, you know what, that's where you'll grow. That's where you'll develop. That's where you'll get not only life's depth and life's development and life's direction. You see, if you're always gadding about, I'll tell you a thing. This will be a mouthful. This will be a mouthful that will really enhance my popularity. I think that one of the greatest curses of our modern society are these social networking sites. I didn't even get a nod. I don't think about 9/10 know what I'm talking about. MySpace and Facebook and Bebo. And if what I'm told, and I'm only a second-hand person in this, if what I'm told is right, you know, the whole idea is project yourself. Put yourself on the net. Let every Tom, Dick and Harry see who you are, what your favourite sports are. And you're going to have to be a wee bit classy, you know. You don't just want to tell them, I'm just a drab Christian. You'll have to have some, and tell them about your music. It shocks me. It shocks me when I hear about some of the music that younger Christians are listening to. I'll tell you this. If what is said on those sites and what people tell me, so there are two qualifications. If what they say about those sites is correct and what people tell me is accurate, I'm not surprised at all that many of our younger folks are so shallow. Some of that music, both the lyrics and the people who produce it, is pernicious. And we always have to be seen. And you need a network of friends. No, dear Christian. No, my friend. That's not the way forward. You know, the Lord touched the life of Gideon when he was alone at the wine press. He touched Moses when he was alone at the backside of the desert, away from the glare of publicity. He touched David when he was alone. And here we have it, that Jacob was left alone. Did you spend any time alone with God today? Did you pray? Did you read a little bit of the scriptures? Had you a space sectioned out in this day where you opened up yourself just to God? And you said, Lord, this part of my day is not open to the telephone. It's not open to the email. It's not open to business. It's not open to friends. This part of my day, I leave it open to hear your voice. Now, I'm serious about this, and I don't want to sound like an old fogey, just hammering everything. Dear Christians, if we don't have that, remember, our lives will not deepen and develop. That's what gives you poison life. That's what keeps you, prevents you from chasing after the latest fads and wasting time just to enjoy the presence of God. Jacob's isolation away from all of these other things. But then I promised to say something about Jacob's incapacitation. This is what really made the difference on that night. That the Lord came. And I say the strong hand was placed upon Jacob. You know, there's a serious, well, it's not serious misunderstanding in the sense of false doctrine. I don't mean that at all. But there's a serious misunderstanding of this chapter. In this sense, this incident. I sometimes hear people speak about Jacob the great man and he wrestled with God in prayer. He was a real warrior in prayer and he wrestled with God, and we should be prayer warriors and prayer wrestlers. Now listen. This has nothing to do with Jacob wrestling with God in prayer. Nothing to do with it. Jacob prayed. Jacob prayed this night. And the prophecy of Hosea chapter 12 tells us that he wept. And he made supplication. But remember that Jacob didn't weep and make supplication when he was wrestling. He only made supplication and prayed when the wrestling was finished. This is not wrestling and Jacob wrestled. Listen, no. Read the Bible. Whatever you do, read the Bible. It says there wrestled. There wrestled a man with Jacob. It wasn't that Jacob wrestled with God. It was God grappling with Jacob to bring this man down. To bring this man down to the place that God wanted him to be. You know, God wrestles with men. And some of us are quite a struggle. Quite a struggle. You know, it could be in your life that God has wrestled with you to try and make you more spiritual. I don't know what means he has taken to do it. God has different ways to get into people's lives, and he has different things, different pressure points on which he can put his hand. He wrestled with him. And as I have said already, it was quite a titanic struggle. I don't know how long it went on for, but if you take Jacob got up that night and he sent the flocks across the Jabbok River, and then he sent the family across, I suppose that took a few hours. To get all that across. And then Jacob went back home. He went back across the river to the northern side. And he was all alone. I'm not just sure exactly what he had in mind. Maybe he wanted just what we say in our language to get his head shared. And just to think about it. And he said, now that's all the noise and bustle away. I've a lot to think about here. I hear that Esau's coming with 400 soldiers. He says, I have a lot in front of me. And maybe he was just thinking about things in that silence and in that solitariness. Who's this? Who's this? And old fellow as he was, he says, there never was anybody put me down yet. And he says, I'll not go down now. And he wrestled. And he put in a struggle. And I think it was Jacob's whole intention. If I can keep upright, I don't know anything about wrestling. I do not. It's not one of my sports or one of my hobbies. But I gather, and you can tell me, some of you experts in it, I gather that one of the purposes is to get the opponent down. And whoever can floor the other fellow first and pin him down. And the Lord wrestles with Jacob. Jacob will not go down. Jacob's too nimble. Jacob was a man that could move on to the other foot very quickly. Jacob was a man that could do a bit of dodging and dancing about. I tell you, he'll not go down, and he'll wrestle, and he'll wrestle, and he'll struggle, and the man doesn't get him floored. He's strong. He's self-sufficient. He's independent. He has only got as far as he has gotten in life until now because he has struggled for it. And anything that he has made, he worked hard for it. And there was nobody got the upper hand over me. And he said, Laban was just as wily a man as ever, but he said he didn't get the upper hand with me. He said, I come out on top. So he says, I'll hold it here too. He said, I'll keep it here too. He said, they're not. No. And as this wrestling match went on, and Jacob struggled for the ascendancy, as I say, suddenly, the man didn't crush him. The man gave him time to give him time to submit. He gave him time to surrender. You know, if Jacob had surrendered sooner, he wouldn't have had the dislocated hip. But when the man saw that I'm going to have to hurt him to help him, he said, the only way that I can get as far with this man as I want to go with him, he said, I'm going to have to hurt him. I don't think he broke his hip. But he just touched him. It's quite a gentle word. But the gentleness of his touch had such an impact upon the conflict that it's just an indication of what he could have done if he had been heavy handed. But he wasn't there to crush Jacob. And when he touched Jacob's thigh, the hollow of Jacob's thigh, and it seemed to go out of joint, or whatever the exact meaning is, Jacob lost his leverage. And he had no power to thrust and push and go the other way. He had no leverage. And he just collapsed into the arms of the man. And only the man held him when he hit the floor. Was not a better position to be in. No longer now contriving and struggling and throwing his weight around and trying to get the better and doing a little bit of a manoeuvre and onto the other foot. No, he's just now clinging. Absolutely depending upon this man to hold him. I tell you, dear brethren, that's really what the Lord wants to bring us to. Where we lose that idea of manipulating and standing in our own strength and dodging and moving and manoeuvring and working things out and reach a situation where we're absolutely dependent on him. You know, when Jacob was crippled, Jacob was conquering. And the man who was a supplanter became a suppliant. You know, the Apostle Paul said a similar thing one day when he was writing. He said, when I am weak, then am I strong. I wonder, would there be any Christian here tonight? Maybe it's me, maybe it's you. Sometimes the Lord has to touch people physically to help them spiritually. We preach that to sinners. We preach that God can put you on the broad of your back. Is that what the preachers say? God can put you on the broad of your back to save your soul. We tell that to sinners. But you see, it works both ways. God wasn't concerned with breaking Jacob's bones, but God was concerned with breaking Jacob's will. And sometimes the Lord has to remove every prop and take away the leverage in our life and the things that we depend upon to muscle around. Sometimes the Lord takes them away. Business, health, friends. Leaves us in a position where we have to just helplessly cling to him. Jacob has lost his own strength and his total dependence is now in the man. I tell you, this is real Christian experience, and he's clinging. And he says, listen, sir, And he's beginning to learn now. I think he's just beginning to learn that this man, this assailant that has tackled me, is more than man. He's more than man. He says he was very patient and he let the thing go on for a while, but he says he just touched me and he says it had such an impact on me. He said this must be more than man. He could have done more. And he says he didn't let me fall. He says when I clung to him, he says he has held on to me and I'm holding on to him. And Jacob cries out. He says, Lord, he says, I'm asking that you'll bless me. He says, Jacob, what's your name? He says, I'll bless you, but he says, tell me your name. This is Jacob interrogated, not just isolated and incapacitated with his own strength broken, dependent. You know, well, I'll have to finish here. Jacob. That's the name that means a fraud, a cheat, a supplanter, a heel grabber, Yaakov. It wasn't a flattering name. Jacob was always taking advantage of other people and reaching round them. Wasn't a flattering name, and he just told it. Remember the day that he told his old father who he was? I'm Esau. No lies now. And as soon as Jacob told the truth and answered the man's question with humility and honesty, it says the man blessed him there. Dear Christians, can I almost close the meeting and say, maybe the Lord is grappling with some of us to bring us to a point of helplessness, number one, and to bring us to a place of honesty. First of all, where we will put our total dependence in Him and we'll abandon every other maneuver and every other prop and bring us to a place where we're just prepared to tell the truth. You know, many people live a lie. I hope there's no one in this meeting. I have no reason to think there is. I hope there's no one in this meeting and you have lived a life of deceit, a double life on the side. And the reason that you're not making progress in the things of God and deepening in your relationship with the Lord is that there's hidden sin. May the Lord grapple with your conscience. Not grapple with your body as he did with Jacob. Not touch your thigh, the hollow of the thigh. May God grapple with our conscience and touch our hearts. That we tell him just what we are. Carnal, unspiritual, undeveloped, immature people. Just tell him what we are. And if we get down before him in the solitude of his presence, maybe he would bless us there and make us into better people. Jacob carried the mark of this for years, I take it to come. And I still am inclined to think that one night of an individual encounter with the Lord can leave its marks of improvement on a believer for the rest of his days. You know, a man that has a night like this, Jacob was different. That's why I tell you this last point was Jacob illuminated. The sun rose upon Jacob. I've had to say negative things about Jacob, which the Bible says. But you know, Jacob was a great man. And the best part of his life was still to come. And he went hobbling out from Peniel. Just crippled but conquering. He got a new name. He got a new relationship with God. He had a legacy for generations to come. It's the first time in the Bible, as you know, we get the name Israel. No more Jacob, but Israel. I tell you, Christians, that's what God would want for each one of us, that he could say about everybody in this meeting. No more Jacob, but Israel. Something princely. Instead of something devious. No more Jacob, but Israel. And that beautiful name of Israel was left as a legacy for the 12 tribes that sprang from his 12 sons. What a legacy for the future. And all of that springing from one night. One night when Jacob was alone in the presence of God. Giving him a new name. Giving him a new walk. Giving him a new future. Giving him a new daybreak. The sun rose upon Jacob. as he went over Peniel. You see, I may be doing him a disservice, but I'm inclined to think that old Jacob, he wasn't a bit slow. And he knew Esau was coming, and he put all those droves. You remember, we read about it, I didn't talk about it tonight. He put the five droves of sheep, goats and sheep and camels and oxen and asses, five droves with a space between them, and he hoped that every drove that would come would soften Esau. And then he put the women across and all the livestock, but he stayed on the top side of the river. And he says, if Esau gives them all a hiding, he says, I can hook it. He says, I'm safe here, I'll get away. He said, when they're all getting it tough and Esau turns out rough, he said, I'll be able to run. God said, you'll do no such thing. When God had finished with them, when God had finished with them, there was no possibility of running. Who's followed? Just he says, you'll be running nothing, Jake. He says, you'll not need to run like a car. He says, put your trust in me as a crippled, conquering man. And he says, go and face your brother. Go and face your brother. And in the next chapter, when he did go to face Esau, what does the Bible tell us? He had the wives, and he had the flocks, and he had them all organized, and he stayed in behind them. And he says, I'll see how they get on, and then I'll see if it's not at all. The Bible tells us he went in front of them. Went in front of them, and he looked Esau eyeball to eyeball. And the reason he could look Esau eyeball to eyeball is because in chapter 32 he had seen God face to face. And God said, I'll make a man of you. You don't need to be a coward. You don't need to be running away. He said, you just go crippling up in front of the whole band. And he said, you'll enjoy reconciliation with Esau. Dear Christians, if we had more encounters with God individually in our private lives, maybe we could have more reconciliations between brethren that have been estranged, and some of these disputes of 20 years could be sorted out for the glory of God. But don't forget the main point. When Jacob was heading back to the place where God wanted him to be, he had to answer a question. What is thy name? And it was his honest confession that opened up the door to get to the place of God's blessing. I trust we learn the lesson that we live honesty in our lives and progress in godliness. For God's glory shall we pray. Our Father, we thank thee again for these records of thy word. We thank thee for thy visitations amongst men. We thank thee for all who have been touched significantly and transformed by thy hand. And we do ask, Lord, that even something of this touch in all its tenderness might be known in our lives. We would put ourselves before thee. We ask thee to draw close to us. Grant that our conscience will be searched. Grant that our hearts will be honest. And grant that we might have those developed encounters in thy presence that will guarantee progress and even better and brighter days in the future. Preserve us from living in the shadows. Help us to walk as cripples touched by thee in the sunlight. We commit our meditations to thee and ask for thy blessing as we go away in the Saviour's worthy name. Amen. Now our singing will be brief, and it will be 618. 618. The sorrows of the daily life, the shadows over my path which fall. I was just thinking we had shadows there, but that's a bit of light. Thanks, Father. Now we'll only sing, I think maybe we'll certainly sing verse 4, Alone with Thee. We'll sing verse 1 and 4, those two verses only of 618, and we might stand to sing.